Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Jeremy Amick. Hello, Jeremy.
Good afternoon, I guess.
Well, there we go. What time of day is it? So we brought Jeremy in today to talk about Memorial Day. So for those who are longtime or even recent subscribers of the News Tribune, the name Jeremy Amick probably sounds pretty familiar in that he writes a lot of history pieces for us, but his bread and butter, honestly, has been veteran stories. So we're here to talk about Memorial Day. So, Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
All right. So, first of all, you do have a full-time job. So, give folks an idea of what you do when you're not writing.
Well, I have been an investigator, a federal investigator, since 2008, just a few years following my own discharge from the service. Right now, I work for OSHA's Whistleblower Protection Program as a regional supervisory investigator.
All right. So, since about 2009, 2010, Jeremy started writing weekly columns for us about veterans. So kind of give us an idea of how you approach that.
Well, it's interesting, the connection to Memorial Day and to my start at the News Tribune. It's a direct link, because back in 2010 when I submitted my first article, if I'm not mistaken, the first, if not one of the first articles, was about my cousin Eugene Earl Amick Jr., who was killed during the Battle of Savo Island in 1942. He was from Boonville, and he attended William Jewell College, and he had been recently married, and then several weeks later, he was a young ensign communications officer in the U.S. Navy. They assigned him to the USS Astoria, and then, like I said, in August 1942, he was killed in action from shell fire when he was trying to restore communications on the ship while they were being attacked by the Japanese forces. And that story just resonated with me. His family was told that when they found him after he was killed, he was still clutching the communication reels that he was trying to deliver to the other communication station to get those comms restored. And that just stuck to me. It stuck out in my mind, that dedication to duty, and that I had somebody in my family that had, you know, given the ultimate sacrifice. And then several months after that, they commissioned a destroyer escort in his honor, named the USS Amick, that was used for several years. And actually, I can find out in researching that story, on board the wardrobe room in the U.S. on the USS Amick, that's where the Japanese surrendered in the Palau Islands at the same time the main Japanese force was surrendering on the what ship, you know?
USS Missouri.
USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay.
So I didn't realize it was going to be a test here.
That's right. So all these fascinating connections. Mm-hmm. And then I got his story because I interviewed his younger sister, Joanne Comer, and she gave me all these details about him. Joanne passed away recently. And of course, had I not gotten a hold of her, you know, several years ago to do this story, it had been lost.
Yeah.
A lot of the details. And I think that's kind of what motivated me to kind of keep researching these stories, especially about the deceased veterans, to give them, you know, renewed life so we can honor their sacrifices, to make it more personal, you know, so people can understand that, you know, that they were humans. They had dreams, they had aspirations, their lives were cut short. There are people left behind to grieve, even that we should honor them. And of course, that kind of transitioned into, well, how do we best honor them? Well, we honor the living too. So, and then we started doing the stories on the living veterans.
Right.
And here we are 13 years later.
Right. Wow. Time flies, man.
It does.
So, and I think that's what's interesting about the stories too, is that you do a very nice job of kind of helping show how they reached the decision to enter the service, what they did, and then how that shaped their lives. And so certainly, as you're listening, we'll add some links to some of those stories in our show notes so that you can, if you haven't read them, I'd encourage you to read them. So what's the reception been among the public? I mean,
oh, it's been fantastic. Not just the veteran stuff, but the general history articles. I mean, it just, I've been shocked by the reception. But, you know, the military stories, I just love those because they're not all heroes.
Right.
But they all, you know, volunteered or they were drafted and they went forth and did their duty. And I think what you see is in editing and reviewing those articles is there's no two stories the same, is
no,
there?
No, they're
very
not.
Unique. And like you said, how they if they weren't drafted, if they're a more recent veteran and they raised their hand and volunteered, the reason why they did that, it's always kind of neat to know. And
yeah.
The path they took, why they chose a certain career field in the service, and what they did after the service, is it's all very fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, I will say it. A telling point of how well it's been received is that when I'm at community events, you have people who either have family members or veterans mm-hmm. themselves that want to tell their story. And I think that's what's interesting is that, one, obviously they enjoy reading what you've written, but there is an element of this whole history here where veterans necessarily didn't talk a lot to their families about what they did. And yeah. now they're starting to open up a bit more. And this is one of many vehicles that allow them to do that.
Yeah, the only challenge I have had in recent years, well, not really recent years, when I started was the Vietnam vets.
Mm-hmm.
I had no trouble. World War II, the Korean guys and gals would all, you know, willingly tell their stories. And of course, the more recent Persian Gulf, OIF, they were all very open. But the Vietnam, you know, they were very hesitant. And we don't have to get into all that because we all know that the way they were treated coming back, a lot of them just kind of locked up and said they were done with society because mm-hmm. they were mistreated. You know, by far. But when I started, they started seeing these articles in the paper and that we weren't out there trying to make them out to be heroes. And at the same time, we're not out there trying to tear them apart. And their stories are just being told factually. And I think they appreciate the fact that we're not out there trying to use yellow journalism, I think is the old word.
Right.
You know, embellish their stories. And they appreciate that. And I really don't have trouble getting them to I don't want to say submit, but to volunteer for those interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I know you've taken some of those stories and you've compiled them into books.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an opportunity here to share some of those titles that you have.
Well, I always go back to James Shipley.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, because I wouldn't have met him had I not started writing these stories, because a gentleman I was working with at the time, he was a black gentleman, and he said, I attend this black church up in Tipton, and I know that you write stories about veterans. And he goes, well, there's this one guy at our church, he's a deacon there, Deacon Shipley, and he was a Tuskegee Airman. He goes, would you want to talk to him? I'm like, oh, goodness. I mean, because for me, Tuskegee Airmen were fictional.
Right.
Are these mythological creatures
right.
that you hear about, nobody's ever really seen. I'm
exactly.
like, are you kidding me? We got a Tuskegee Airman here in Mid, Missouri. Yeah, I'll get you his number. So I called Jim up and I said, Mr. Shipley, I told him who I was. He goes, yeah, I think I've seen some of your stuff. And I said, would you be willing to let me come interview you? He said, oh, sure. He goes, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. I didn't do anything special. And so I met him up there at the Prairie Grove, just, you know, this historically black church. It's right across from his home. And he was showing me all these pictures and things he did. And I wrote the article, and it was very well received. Well, fast forward a few months later, a gentleman whom I'd just written a book about, Norbert Gerling,
mm-hmm.
from Henley, Missouri, he was a tank destroyer. He passed away 2 weeks after the book was released that I'd written about him. And I'm like, oh, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So I called Jim up, Mr. Shipley, and I said, would you mind if I wrote your biography? He goes, well, I can tell you my story, and if you think it'll work, go ahead and just write it down and do whatever. He goes, again, I didn't do anything special, so don't make me sound like I'm bragging.
Right.
So he was always so humble, mm-hmm. as all this World War II generation are and were. And we wrote his story. It's called Together as One, and it's unique in that I believe it's the only account that I've seen of a – well, who when you hear about Tuskegee Airmen, you read their stories, who do you hear about? Officers,
right,
and
right.
pilots, right?
Right.
You don't hear about the enlisted crew members. Well, he was a crew chief, so I think this may be the only book out there about an enlisted crew chief. And oh my goodness, that book was so well received, and it kind of almost like I think it turned him into a quasi celebrity because he was like, I was retired, now I've got to go speak at all these events 2-3 times a week, and but he enjoyed it.
He sure did.
I got to see him, you know, he really opened up with children, mm-hmm. just the glimmer in his eyes. He not only used that book and whenever he's speaking to people to share his story of Tuskegee Airmen, but he also used it as a forum to share his Christian faith.
There you go.
And he became something of a second grandfather to me, and just we're family. I consider him family, and his children, they're they're my family as well. We just all gelled really well and looked out for each other. And he passed away last summer. And before he passed, we got to see him go up on a plane at the Jeff City Airport, a World War II trainer that he got to watch in the skies of Tuskegee, Alabama, while I was in the service. And that was a special moment. Another special moment was we were invited to speak at Kansas City at the library up there, and it was recorded for a C-SPAN special. And it just watch him open up. I mean, just this country boy who worked hard all his life, didn't have a college education, and share his story in a format that people just loved, and it really connected to people. Well, he passed away again last summer, and about that time I was able to release a children's book about him called Jim and the Red Tails.
Yeah.
And because it was a story I felt that needed to be shared in a format that children could understand and embrace, because the Tuskegee story is just a timeless one. And I'm just glad to have some small part in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's what's interesting about these stories from the veterans is just how inspirational they continue to be to later generations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we celebrate Memorial Day, let's talk a little bit about just how we can best honor sacrifices of those veterans who paid the ultimate sacrifice in service to the country.
Well, I mean, one of the simplest ways is cemeteries. I mean, go volunteer at your local cemeteries every year. Like last night at Enloe Cemetery, there was only about, I think, 7 of us volunteers out there to put 360 flags out on veterans' graves, and that takes a lot of time to do that. And then a lot of these cemeteries need the help. And I think, to me, that's one of the best ways to honor them, and of course to attend, you know, ceremonies. We have a ceremony every year at Enloe Cemetery on that Sunday of Memorial Day weekend at 2:30 p.m. They've been doing that since after the Civil War. So it's nice for people to come and attend those events. Well, I mean, another thing too that it's really important to me about Memorial Day is remembering the finding out about the people in your community that made those sacrifices. I'm so proud to being from Russellville. At Russellville School, they are very dedicated to, you know, introducing the youth in those classes to the heroes that come from those communities. A lot of it's because of people like Denise Kreider, one of the teachers out there. She's established a World War II class. Her class actually comes out every year to Enloe Cemetery and puts 360 wreaths out on veterans' graves around Christmas. So, you know, when schools seeing them participate in events like that, the local level, just remembering, I mean, like one thing that always sticks out in my mind is St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Loman had a very small congregation during World War II. They still do. It's not a massive church, a beautiful historic church, but they had five of their young men die in World War II from that small congregation. And to me, that's just it's hard to believe that the level of sacrifice that some of these small communities like Loman have made to our freedoms.
Yeah. Obviously, it's common when folks talk about Memorial Day, it becomes so synonymous with the beginning of summer and family events and things like that. And certainly, it is an opportunity for families to celebrate. But as a veteran yourself, what drives you to write these stories, to volunteer at the cemeteries? Why is this a special holiday for you?
It, like I said, it ties back to several factors. One, the Eugene Earl Amick, my other cousin, Roscoe Enloe, for whom the American Legion was named. My mother's an Enloe. He was a cousin that was killed in World War I. The American Legion in town assumed his name to perpetuate his memory. You know, those are family members. That's blood that gave of their blood, I mean, in their lives to in defense of freedoms or the cause of freedom. And, you know, it's like if we can't even remember our own family members and their sacrifices, and it seems like we're almost lost as a nation. Going out to the cemetery and being on all these cemetery boards to me is a small payment to make to return the favor of what they've done for us.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that we can ever repay that again. I think anybody that's served in the military, they understand that. You know, my son, he's in the U.S. Army right now. My father fought in Vietnam. Of course, I was in the service. You know, lots of family member in there, and it's just, I think anybody that serves they understand that there's the potential that, you know, they could lose their life in the service. That's, you know, one of those underlying things you just understand. But to me, I think they all want to know that if something does happen to them, they won't be forgotten. And it's great, you know, seeing people that come together, you know, the Gold Star Monument, to raise the money for that by the Capitol, the Johnny Campbell Memorial Highway in Russellville. We had to raise $4,000 for that signage, and I think we did it in like 3 days through a Facebook fundraiser. I mean, people are just they're seeking ways to honor our fallen. Another Campbell was honored on 54, and they raised the funds for that to get signs up. We got James Shipley Memorial Highway. We raised the money for that in like 2 or 3 days, and that'll be dedicated later this year. So. I mean, those monuments are beautiful, and monuments are a good way to honor our fallen veterans. But at the same time, the best way to honor our fallen is to take care of the living. That's why I think we need to make sure we're also taking care of those coming back with wounds of war. And the VA can't do it all. So the community coming together to make sure we can eradicate issues, the scourges to society, like veterans homelessness. I mean, no veteran should be homeless, in my opinion. I may be biased on that, but that's just one of several ways I think that we can honor the fallen, is by also taking care of the living.
Yeah, clearly there's that element of freedom. It's a cliche, it's perhaps a cliche, but freedom isn't free, right? Mm-hmm. That some folks did pay the ultimate price for it. Some are still paying the price alive with injuries and just disabilities. And so I think you make a great point that the more we can do to recognize that cost of freedom, the better we would be as a society. So,
well, and another good thing too is, I mean, I wasn't really alive during that time frame, and I don't recall any of it, but, you know, I'm glad that the society has come to the extent, you know, we are divided on a lot of issues. We always have been. Maybe it's not any different than it has been in the past. But I know years ago, it seemed like in reading history, is people could not separate the war from the warrior. Mm. And if they didn't agree with the war, it's like, well, they took it out on the warriors, you know, the veterans, right, who were called in to serve those wars. And Vietnam, I think, was kind of the hot button for that. But I know in recent years, whether or not people agree or disagree with military conflict, they tend to support the veterans. So, I mean, they're kind of the ones that are caught in the middle, sure, so to speak. So.
Sure. All right. Well, good point. Well, Jeremy, we appreciate you joining us today. Any parting thoughts you want to share with folks who are listening?
Get out to those cemeteries, meet the family members that perhaps made the ultimate sacrifice, and ensure their stories aren't forgotten.
All right. Well, Jeremy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.